So we've been discussing the centrality of a Kol Kamina Gamadina relative to the halacha's default rules. Some of this turned on how to interpret the principle in our sugya of the Torah mandating the workday for the poalim, and what kind of a halacha that is. Is it just some sort of description in the psukim, or is this some sort of normative prescription? But certainly you get the, whichever way you go here, you get a very strong sense of a Kol Kamina Gamadina, that the halacha has got to defer and yield to the norms of the marketplace. Probably the strongest formulation of this, was from that Diak in the Ramach. I spent some time today looking after Yoni's Diak. So it's not a general rule. It's true that he says Vitzarachian in some cases when he has like a venira. I don't think it's true as a general rule that he closes all of his comments with Vitzarachian in the Masechta. Evan, you have a thought on this already?
Just on the Ramach, something I was floating by Zachary a few days ago, and I just didn't want to like text it out. Could it be that the hesitation of the Ramach is because we're kind of giving the Soker, the Baal bias, too many sort of too much rights? Like it's kind of the protection on the like worker protection. So just opposing the previous statement where it's like, oh, of course, right, the statement before, like, how do people offer a fee, you know? Like, obviously, we're going to give as many rights, as many, like, push-off points to the workers, even if it's kind of, like very obvious. They accept that they're going to work longer, and then they're just like, no, we don't want to.
Right. Meaning, I think... You're saying it might be something distinct about Lahashkim Lahariv, you know, which would be imposing some sort of like danger or unfair burden on the worker, and that's why it's in a yachal lahasnos al kach, right? That's kind of the idea.
Right, and that just extends to generally we don't want the Baal Bais or the buyer to have too much power over the workers, and that's why even though they stipulated beforehand, we're still going to hesitate on giving him that power.
Yeah. That's quite possible. I think that would definitely work if you thought that like the Minhag HaMedina reflects some sort of protection. So that is possible. And we'll see that in some cases the halacha here does do that. For our purpose, so that's definitely a possibility. For our purposes right now, I think it's sufficient to just say that there's some question whether you could whether even an agreement to circumvent the established Minhag would be enforced, right? Take Shua's point from last time. Noah and Zechariah pointed out like this medrash that Tosos quotes, and you know, the Girsa appears in the medrash. When the medrash cites like our Mishnah, it says, "Tanina nasocher sapolin who pasak imayam lahashkim lahariv makam shenagu shalol lahashkim lahariv ena yachal lachofan." Here, the language of the medrash is a little more explicit that. Even when you're posek, even when you have this kind of stipulation that they should go, you know, wake up earlier, show up earlier to work than the norm, if it contradicts the minhag, it won't be valid, right? So, makom shenagu shelo hashkim lahar v'ini yachal lachofan. So that would be nice. That would be like an affirmative statement of the Ramach's position if you take this girsa of the medrash seriously, right? Zachariah, that was the diak, right?
Yeah.
So I think that would be a nice support for that view. Okay, so we have Shua here joining us. Okay, good. So that was one point I wanted to make. The second point I wanted to make in reference to the last Chabura is I think you see this point that it's not just that Minhag HaMedina establishes some default background presumptions in cases where you don't specify to the contrary. It's stronger than that. It's that the minhag establishes the baseline for any expectation in the agreement. Let me flesh out what I mean by that. So if you look here in some of the achronim on Shulchan Aruch, so for example, Rabbi Kiva Eger, so he says, commenting on this din in Simen Shin Lamed Aleph, v'im yesh hakchasha b'neihem, the Balabayas Omar Lahashkim Laharev Upoa Makhisho. So there's like some dispute about whether they had agreed to abide by the Minug or to something or to some provision other than the Minug. Ain Balabayas Neman Afshehu Muchzak Kivan Ditainaso Neged Haminug. Right, so you might think that, like, oh, if the Balabayas is muchzak, he's in some superior position, that should give him the right of way. Like, halacha will normally say, motzmei chavir al haraya. But that's not the case when it contradicts a minag. So one way of interpreting this idea, tell me if you agree, is that the normally in halacha, hamotzmei chavir al haraya, b'cheskas mamon, the person who's muchzak, that establishes the baseline for who's presumptively has the right of way, who has the burden of proof. But in a case where there's a clear-cut minug, it's the minug that determines the baseline for the expectations and, you know, what the presumptive rights and duties of each party might be. I think a nice way of reinforcing this idea is from the Yushalmi in our sugya, and here Parag Zayin Halacha Aleph. You know, the Yushalmi has our Mishnah, Kol Kamineg HaMedina, and then you get this famous phrase of Rav Hoshea, Zos Omeres HaMinag Mevatel Sa'alacha. Am Rav Imi Kol HaMotim Mechavero Alav Lohavi Raya Chutz Mizu. So you get the Yushalmi statement that there's Minag Mevatel Halacha, and then Rav Imi saying that Motim Mechavero Alav Raya is overridden by Minhag. Now, the way that's interpreted by some Rishonim, you can see the Rush, for example, here. He has the Yushalmi as saying that v'chol makam amotz mechaber al varaya chutz mizu zos homeres minag mevata halacha. That the sense in which minag overrides the halacha is in shifting the baseline and the shifting the burden of proof from a amotz mechaber al varaya rule to assuming that the default is going to be like the minag. Adam, you have a hand?
Yeah, is it possible to understand this as being that the Gemara's view, or the Mishnah's view, is really that what we're concerned is maintaining the status quo. So theoretically, Hamas Mechavir Allah Haraya is a version of maintaining the status quo. Wherever the money is, that's where it should be, because that's how it was previously. But in case we have a minhag that establishes something against the grain of Hamas Mechavir, then we define the status quo by that minhag.
I think that's exactly right. That's how I'm using this idea of the baseline, right? It's like, by default, the halacha's rule is motzei mechaber al varaya, the cheskas mamon establishes, what's the term you used, Adam?
The status quo.
But when there's a prevalent minug, the minug establishes the status quo. And that's why we swap out the motzei mechaber al varaya rule for the minug rule.
I think the only thing that makes it a little troubling is the lashon of minhag mevatel halacha.
Yeah.
Is if they're really trying to get the same end, then it shouldn't be mevatel. It should be some other language if they're really bringing out the same end.
So I have a very strong view about this. I think, you know, it's like the Rambam sometimes will say, like, people only say these things because they get carried away by the meaning of language, not like the true understanding of the concept, right? So I think that this is like a classic case. I think minhag mevatel halacha here can't mean mevatel in any modally charged sense, right? It doesn't mean that like the minhag is somehow overriding the halacha or something like that. I think the only rational way to interpret this is that the halacha here is providing that the normative halacha incorporates the minhag, right? In cases where there's a clear-cut minhag medina. I just don't think it makes sense to read it any other way. I mean, you can imagine Congress saying, like, here we're passing a law that says custom overrides the law, right? Like, well, it's a normative law that's telling you that, right? So I think that's the way to understand the Yushalmi. I think, you know, mevatel is a strange phrase. Maybe it was just borrowed for the alliteration of, like, minhag mevatel. It's not really alliteration, minhag mevatel. But no, I just don't think that mevatel can be. I mean, I'm happy to be convinced otherwise, but I just don't see that as a plausible reading of the Yushalmi.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think also the language chutz mizu also makes it a little stronger.
Chutz mizu meaning this one place, like an exception, or...
Yeah, saying that this is an exception, it makes you want to take it a little more seriously.
I don't know. Not so sure. Anybody have thoughts on this? On the Yishalmi? Any of the... Shua, looks like you have a thought on this.
I was just thinking that if Cole were here, he loves to quote my dad, who says that the biggest riot to the about the halacha is that the halacha says you have to pay your taxes and the rent is not to tip.
Okay.
But since Cole's not here, we don't have a thought.
Right. Cole can't make it on Thursdays because he has a conflict, but he's in our Tuesday group. Okay, good. Any other thoughts on the Yerushalmi here? We'll see the Yerushalmi resurfaces and it gets applied in an interesting way by the Rashba. We'll see that in a few minutes. So, I just want to also point out two other Makoros that point to this kind of strong force of Minhag. I think one way of formulating the idea I'm getting at is to distinguish between the idea that if there's a minhag, then it's reasonable to assume that the parties just implicitly adopt the minhag. That's one way of looking at minhag. I think there's a stronger way of looking at it and saying that whenever there is a minhag, the baseline, the status quo, all these things are just defined by the norms of the area. So it's not just an expectation that, oh, you know, they didn't specify, so minastam, they were thinking in terms of the norms. But it's almost stronger than that, that there's like a force field that pulls everything into the minhag, unless there's a very clear explication and agreement to the contrary. So let me try to motivate that in two ways. So one is by this idea that we already saw in Rabbi Akiva Eiger that... amigo is not going to work against the minhag, muchzakos is not going to work against the minhag. You see a similar idea in the Hagos HaShri, where he cites Rebarach mi Regensburg, citing Rabbi Nachmanon and Rav Haigon, that l'shanos haminhag afilu b'migo eino neman, v'afilu tafas lo mahani l'shanos haminhag im toen she'asu maisa v'shinu haminhag. So here it's like one party's claiming that they've like, oh, we had agreed to do something other than the minhag. And the Hagos HaShri is citing these Rishonim, is holding that none of that works, right? Like just the minhag is so ironclad that even these gimmicks that work in other areas of halacha won't work to oppose the kind of the force that minhag has.
I haven't seen anything to point this way yet, but just... This kind of reminds me a little bit of what I said last time, that if you think about why that monos is seemingly at less of an issue here, because it doesn't seem like, I don't think we're saying that amigo is less convincing in the place of a minhag. I think it's equally as possible to say that we have decided that for some public policy reason, we're not going to allow people to move office, even if they're probably telling the truth.
I think that's a really good way of putting it. You say public policy, which is interesting, right? So I think that's exactly what I'm getting at, and it contrasts with the idea that just minastam, this is what they were thinking, right? It's like no, it's that the halacha is pushing us in the direction of the minha governing all these dini mamonis rules, unless you were very explicit about contracting out of it. Now, why that might be, I think you say public policy. I think that raises a lot of interesting questions. Right, why the halacha pushes you in this direction. There's some interesting things we can say. Let's hold off on exactly what that reason is. When we try to figure out the reason why the halacha pushes us to minhag ha-medina, I think that your point here will resurface, Yeshua. Yeah. Adam, I see you have a hand.
Yeah. It goes to street discussing, not just in a case where there is a chunkas about situation, but it's not being said you can never override it. Is that right?
I think when he means l'shanos ha-minhag, he really means l'shanos mei ha-minhag. Not that like that's some dispute about the community changing its norms. It's really about...
Like, in terms of if I'm writing a contract and I want you to work extra hours, that's not an enormous community, then I can't do it.
Right. Wait, say it again? Unless...
He's saying that, let's say the community works 9 to 5, but I want to write a contract with you, that'll be 9 to 7. Is he saying that I can't do that?
No, he's just saying that if you want to do that, you have to be very clear and explicit about doing that. Right, things that help your nemanis in other other areas of halacha won't help your nemanis here to make that claim.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
is this just like a kind of pushing question, like what is the role of all rules, whether they call rules ever just reflect the party's understanding and be flushed out, or if there's some kind of normative power behind them? Because you're not saying that this is creates a irrebuttable presumption. You're saying your production that they can specifically opt out of, but they have to be super, super clear instead of just kind of clear. You know, I just wonder if that would even reflect itself in whether conduct, you know, like closest has those three levels of conduct that indicates das. So, like, would there be any outcome, you know, basically? But basically, it's a question of why all those.
Yeah, I think we're going to see that. So there's this, Donnie's the expert in this literature, about like, what if the parties have no idea about what the minhag is, right? You know, it's like two Hamish Yidden doing business, and they have no idea that like the law or the custom in New York is that there's a doctrine of impossibility or frustration of purpose, something like that, right? So there's no conceivable way of reading that into their das. Would there still be normative force to minhag? Yoni, is that partially what you're getting at?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the theory advanced would be like, had you given them full information and both time you argued, they would have come to that conclusion. So, you know, the information gap is not the issue. This could be reasonably assumed that had they known, they would have.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the point that Shua's getting at is that, you know, maybe there's almost like a desire to just have uniform practices, right? And so just the uniform practice is going to be determined by the minhag. And it's not just a presumption that, hey, you know, minastam, you were thinking along these lines. But we'll see some of that when we get to the formulations in the chuvos. Evan?
Just if the goal, or if the halakhic goal was to sort of create a baseline, then wouldn't it kind of be more, I guess, easier to just generate that baseline than say, well, but if you wanted to generate a uniform baseline, wouldn't the halakha just establish that and not rely on a non-uniform object such as minhag? And so minhag changes depending where you are. I guess, or exactly that's the point, is like it's trying to be localized, uniform, not sort of global.
Yeah, I think it would be very difficult to have a uniform top-down, you know, here's what the rule is for all Jews across all societies and time, right? So minhag is a much more efficient, clearer, more public way of doing that, right?
Right, and I think that also leads into sort of the second option that we were saying before, which is, if this minhag is meant to not only be like, oh, what were you saying when you said let's make a deal, but really here's how we establish deals, or here's how we establish nemanus or das, however you want to put it, because this is how we do it, not just filling gaps in
yeah,
the conversation.
Exactly. That's exactly the, I think that's what Chua was capturing, if like it's a public policy more than a presumption of what was going on in the back of your mind. Good. So we'll see some important nafkamina to this question. Or maybe Donnie will walk us through them if he so desires. So I want to raise one more makar, I think, that relates to this. I think the machlokas and the Mishnah itself could relate to this tension about how much we're trying to reconstruct das, maybe, versus this being a kind of policy to push everything towards the uniformity of minhag. So you recall in the Mishnah itself, the Mishnah started off with saying, Akol k'minhag ha-medina, and so if there's a minhag to provide meals, you got to provide meals. If there's a minhag about the work hours, you're governed by the work hours. Then the Mishnah tells this story about Rabbi Yochanan ben Masya, who turns to his children, and he tells them to hire poalim, and they go and they're posek mizonos. right? So I think the assumption here is that they're operating in a case where the in an area where the minhag was that people eat food, that the employer provides food for the employees. And then the children went and were posting mizonos. So that was interpreted, or at least Rabbi Yochanan ben Masi himself interpreted that as, hey, if you were posting mizonos in a makom where there's already a minhag to provide, the implication is that you're agreeing to give them more than the minhag. And then you had this concern, oh no, I'm on the hook for this exorbitant amount, because if you're posting mizonos to, you know, Bnei Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov, the only thing that's right for them is Kesuda Shlomo B'Shaito. Right, so that's why he says, like, wow, you have to, you know, before Haskalas HaMalacha, before we're locked into these terms, you have to back out of the agreement. Right? So, Bini, Afilu Imata Oslam Kesuda Shlomo B'Shaito, Lo Yatzali Dechavascha, B'chule B'chule. And then Reb Shimon Gamliel disagrees, and this is how we paskin. He says, Lo HaYatzarech Lomar, because HaKol Kaminega Medina. Right, so Reb Shimon Gamliel's point is that even if you're a posek mizonos in Bimakom where there's a minag, there's no concern that you're posek more than the minag. Right, the minag just defines the terms of that psikas, of that psika between the parties. So there are different ways of interpreting this machlokas. Right, you could just say, oh, it's a question like, you know, if there's a minag and you're posek, does that mean you're a posek, you know, within the minhag or separate from the minhag? Another way you could understand this is that, you know, the machlokes is to what extent we have like a policy of pushing these psikos into the pre-existing minhag, right? We have like for uniformity reasons, we want everything just to comply with the minhag unless it's like crystal super clear to the contrary. Minik, does this take a stance on the little bit of the point that you were making? I know it's a tentative, it's a bit of a speculative suggestion.
I just, you know, it's hard to know, like, so case specific. It's like a tiny little bit more thumb on the scale, a different timeline, it's just like a hard thing to know. Like, why would they make this one? This is like the flashpoint.
Like, why is this the flashpoint? What do you mean?
No, like, what you're saying is it seems like that quantity is different.
We could keep our eyes open for other cases, but I think this is one plausible explanation of like what the machlokas is between the two days and the Mishnah. I mean, again, there are other ways you can interpret it. I mean, maybe you have, like, a favored other interpretation. But I think it's just, like, one nice way of seeing how this tension might come to the foreground. Okay, Zachary, Evan, you had a hand? Okay, any comments? Okay, so now let's... Oh, good, we have Zachary and Adam.
Yeah, just, I don't know, maybe alternative explanation. I didn't understand the pasuk on the zonos being an extra thing. I understood it being it's just... They hired them with the condition of, oh, we'll give you food, and that was left stop. And that Rabbi Yochanan ben Masia simply is not applying the principle of Kol Kamina Medina, it's not really on his radar at all, and therefore he falls back and kind of more moral principles, like, okay, if I have a worker, and I said, I'm going to give you food, then morally, since they're now from Yitzhak Yaakov, that's an unlimited, they have an unlimited tefiyah on me. And it seems to be a real tefiyah, because he makes them accept and deny that they don't have any tefiyah on him except for Haskinis. So it seems to be much more radical machlokas of just, do we believe in a Kol Kamina Medina or not?
Yeah, I think Rashi disagrees. I think Rashi says that, I could double check Rashi here. I think Rashi says that like the view of the first day in the Mishnah is that since you're a posek when there's a minhag, right? So like the right way to think of it is that you're a posek beyond the minhag. So it's not
Rashi,
that.
Rashi is
that? I think it's Rashi. If it's not in the Mishnah, then I thought it was on the Gemara. When the Gemara comments on this Mishnah, like Maisa Listor, I could pull it up. But do you see that, Zachariah? Or
no, I didn't get that Gemara. Okay.
Okay, I'll add it to the Makor sheet. That was my sense from that Rashi. Okay, so now I wanna try to flesh out what the underlying theory for a Kol Kamina Kamedina would be, maybe a little bit to take a stance on this point, these points that are being raised about why the halacha differs to minhag. So let me just point out, to move in that direction, this idea of Kol Kamina Kamedina appears in several places in the Gemara. So one is Baba Basra Beis Mabez, Ashutfin Shiratzi Las Mechitza B'chatzer. So you have Shutfin, and they have to build a wall in between. So the kind of wall that is going to be built is all defined by Minhag HaMedina, Kol Kamina HaMedina. Same in Bava Metzia Kuf Gimel Amid Aleph. You agree to be some kind of a sharecropper, or you're going to be a tenant on a field, and you're going to pay rent through the produce that the field yields through your labor. So the kinds of duties that the tenant is expected to do, if they're not explicated, is all defined by Minhag HaMedina. And if you look at the Gemara there on Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, you know, the Gemara says, you know, this is a kind of pshita, it's obvious that we're going to defer to Minhag. But the Gemara says, like, the chiddush here is that even if you agree to pay more than the norm or pay less than the norm, it doesn't follow from there that you were agreeing to do less than the Minhag provides for. Right, so the mere fact that you're being paid less does not give you license to do less unless that's supported by the minhag. Right, that's the idea here. Kamash Malan, so the Gemara says in two places. Lo tzricha d'kuli yama makabli b'riva v'azal yu v'kibla b'tilsa. Ma'a d'seima amr le'hai d'tafi l'cha d'aita d'yavis le'bilanos. Kamash Malan v'ibay le'lefrushe le'. So the idea is that you still can't break from the minhag unless there's like a very explicit agreement to the contrary. The fact that like your price is set a little differently doesn't give you license to argue that you're treated differently than the minhag. Sakaria?
Yeah, what do you make of the difference between back and forth here, which seems to really support this second theory, that really a high level of farish, otherwise doesn't matter any other background to context of the agreement, versus our Gemara on Mishnah Pei Gimel, where it seems to be more of a taina game, more back and forth. It's like, oh, we would say that that's a night of intashirta, that we'd be doing better work. As in, it seems that they agree that the fact that he's paying them extra in the Pei Gimel case is a real taina, and it really does earn an extra zechus. Question, they're just haggling on what that is. Over here,
yeah.
It seems like the Aris
I think the it's an interesting point, except that in both cases the Gemara is insisting that you're bound within the parameters of Minhag, right? You're saying, well, it's interesting that in one Gemara there's some recognition that there's a benefit or something, but that corresponds to the deviation from Minhag, and the other Gemara there isn't, right? So how do you make sense of that, right? That's your question?
Yeah.
I'd have to think about it. I think for our purposes right now, it doesn't change the fact that the Gemara thinks you're locked into the Minhag unless you have a super clear provision to the contrary, right?
I found the first Gemara more inclining towards our first understanding that we're talking about das, because if we're talking about the das of parties, then if the minhag only talks about where you're hiring workers from the standard rate, and in this case you're hiring them for a higher rate, then well, listen, you can't rely on the minhag to inform you what their das is. It's a totally different situation. And that Gemara seems to imply that. Over here, it seems to have a much harder conclusion. That you just know we totally defer to minhag.
Yeah, it's a nice suggestion. Let me think about it a little bit. Yeah, I think it's a nice suggestion. So I wanna take a look now at this Rav Moshe, and then we'll come back to talk about Situmta a little bit. Did anybody get a chance to prepare the Rav Moshe here? This pretty famous Rav Moshe. Let me see, I went too far. I know. In Chilek Aleph, Siman Ayin Beis of Choshe Mishpat. It's like a very nice, I know it's a little far ahead in the Makoro sheet. Donnie, you want to tell us about the Ramosha?
This is the rental one?
Yeah, the rent control one.
Yeah, the, where there were people in New York who weren't keeping to the rental agreements. The question was, do you have to go by Minhag Medina?
What do you mean by weren't keeping to the rental agreement?
I'm trying to remember the mitzvahs of the case. I don't remember offhand.
So you have a landlord and tenant in New York. I think it's New York, or at least it's a big city.
I think it was New York. I remember.
And you know, the city has pretty strict rent regulations, right? You have like rent control and stuff like that. And the question is, when you have two Jews, who landlord and tenant, so are they bound by like New York's rent control laws, or are they bound by the substantive provisions of halacha, which are, you know, much weaker than New York's rent control laws? Like, they give the landlord much greater power to evict somebody and kick him out and raise rent. So that was the question that these people had a dispute over. So just, I mean, if you just kind of had that question, what would you think the rule would be? Like, which system applies? Anybody have thoughts? Evan?
Just having done that survey of a bunch of Gemaras that said you follow the Minhag, I would assume that would be the way to follow it. Also, as a tenant and as a renter, you probably signed some documents that said you follow these laws. So I don't know if that's the serious question, obviously, but
yeah. In this case, it seems clear they didn't. There was no provision in the agreement that set like what the rules were. Right, Adam.
Yeah, I'm curious if we care about there being, say, a counter minhag. So if the Jews in an area tend to follow one minhag while they're going to follow a different minhag, do we care about that? Do we want that to be now?
Yeah. One of the interesting things, that's a really good point. One of the interesting things about this case, Adam, is that it's not so much a minhag as much as it's like a law. And our Moshe just treats it as the same thing as minhag.
There's a
Moshe hold by Gemma Chosedina. He doesn't want to deal with that
mess. Yeah, right. So famously he says, famously he opens up this, you know, we'll just look at the, we have Yair. Yair, you want to weigh in? Oh, we don't hear you.
That's not working.
Now?
Yeah.
There you go. Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just gonna mention the din is a mahuta consideration. Which I haven't seen the shuva, so I wasn't sure. But once I saw that happened, I lowered my hand.
Okay, good. So, Ramosha here, you know, we'll just walk through the shuva quickly. It's Bisocher Sheina Rotze Latzeis Mishim Shekein Hu Din Hamedina. Right, every landlord's nightmare. Right, the tenant doesn't want to leave because he's like protected by the law. Now, there's whatever the maskir needs it for whatever reason. So Moshe starts off here and he says, hey, you know, you asked me to decide based off Dina the Machlus Adina. He's like, well, you know, Dina the Machlus Adina is really complicated and there's so many different views. You know, the Chalkas Yaakov says that, you know, in Dina the Machlus Adina, sometimes poskim are magbio hashamayma and sometimes they're mashlicha la'aretz. You know, sometimes posts can talk about it as if it's like controls everything, and sometimes they like throw it down as if it's worthless. And so Moshe kind of says, like, look, it's such a mess to start thinking about Dina Machlus Adina, so I'm not going to get into it. And then he says, I love this part, like, I don't want to seem unpatriotic by holding that you could go against the Dina Machlus Adina. He's like, Od mitam shebal Yisrael chas v'shalom shana maktinim kvod amalucha dimedina senu po. Right, so it sounds like, I guess he was leaning towards thinking that Dina Machlus Adina doesn't apply, but didn't want to say that it doesn't apply. So Ramosha analyzes this from the perspective of Hakol Kamina Kamedina, and he has a few interesting things to say that shed light on what the normative basis for Minhag would be. He says, Eina Nidon Kan Mitzah Din Mahusa. And he says, once there's a law of Ala Elu Shesachru Achar Shekvar Nasa Hadin Me'amalchus, so once there's a law, Velo Hisnu Beferush Shekishayavo Hazman Yem Mechuyev Latzes, Ella, I guess, Sasam, or they didn't say anything, Have Kehisnu Shadaita Didin Hamalchus Hiskirlo. Very important phrase, right? So it's like, there's this background law, and you enter into an agreement under that background. So, minastam, it's as if you're masne adaita de din hamalchus. Now, when I first read this Ramosha, and the second, third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, every time until, like, this week, I was pretty convinced that Ramosha was saying that it's really just manifestation of Kol Tanai Shevin Mamon Kayim. Right? We're filling in the blanks here through the Minhag. So it's like, hey, what were the Maskir and Socher thinking? They were thinking the provisions of the Minhag. Have kehisnu shadaita dindinamachos hiskirlo. Now that I read this, when I read this week, it occurs to me that there's no reason to read Ramosha that way, right? I mean, he could just be saying as a consequence of the normative force of Minhag, if you don't specify to the contrary, it's as if you're bound, it's as if, right, the provisions are, it's as if you were masna adaita de Minhag. So I'm not sure whether there's reason to think that this Ramosha is committed to the Kol Tanai Shevin Mamon as if you made a provision with these terms, or whether Ramosha is saying, like, no, the halacha just defers the normative force of Minhag as a rule without taking any stand on this is the best inference to what the parties were actually thinking. Ramosha goes on here. Any of you have thoughts just on that phrase before we go to look at the rest of the tshuva, whether it takes a stand one way or the other?
I don't know. Maybe just because I saw this before, and before you had this other idea, I was really more convinced of for your first reading.
Yeah?
I think maybe because I thought he's leaning on the Rashba, like the Tanai, and like, I don't know. Like, maybe I have to read it six more times to get there, but it's hard for me to just
Minik, it looks like you unmuted yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering, of course, the second understanding why you'd be grandfathered in.
Meaning why you'd be grandfathered in if the... So I think that might just be a separate question of when we apply Minhag. Right, which Minhag gets applied? Like the Minhag of the original point of the agreement, or like the Minhag of right now? Right, so...
I mean, I understand, the two ways I don't understand would be if either it was an assessment of what they thought or what they should have thought, or if it's like on an expanding, like, you should title the bar, which like you want the general sounds, those both make sense to you, should be done at the time of bargaining, but if it's like an overriding power of Minhag that you just fall back on, I don't know
that it makes sense that if they had made the agreement beforehand, if they're coming to
now, we should probably rely on what's
enforced
now rather than
what's enforced
after.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure I fully agree. Shua looks like he's like Elu Velu here. You know, he's like nodding.
I think it's a good point. I just think it's not like necessarily correct. Like there could be a middle ground where we do think that overrides or dictates, but we're not gonna reinterpret like good faith negotiations from like a prior context. We just don't think that it's worth, you know, like having to reapply a new overlying structure on all of the previous negotiations.
Right. It's like the law should be like prospective, not retrospective, right? Like
right. It's a very constitutional issue with ex post facto laws or something like that.
Such lawyers. Yeah. Not only do they have this back and forth, they both smiled, you know, by talking about the Constitution.
That's because I knew it was only by criminal. But anyway,
you're trolling him. Yair, you have a thought on this reading?
Yeah, it's unclear in the context of the Tshuva, to me at least, how much he's identifying the Din Malthus with the Minhag HaMedina, and in different places it seems like he's, you know, using different kinds of subtly different formulations. If the authority derives from the fact that some people are doing the Din Malchus, then that sounds much more normative, right? The normative force of the Din Malchus. We're not going to invoke Din and Malchuta, but that's sort of what's going on. And in the places where he sort of conflates that with Minhag, it sounds closer to your first six reads as opposed to your seventh and final read.
Well, I'm okay with saying that Ramosha's... I think the fact that Ramosha is willing to make the move so easily from top-down legislation, right, to Minhag, like, he should say, oh, is this practiced by everybody, right? That should be the standard. I think the fact that he's willing to extend Minhag to, like, what the law is, I think also actually moves away from the idea about Minastam, what's the intent of the party, and more to, like, legal, like, conformity to the rightful norms. But I might want to think about that a little more.
Yeah, that's what I was suggesting. Especially this underlined, the last underline of the Tshuva, right, where he's very explicitly saying there's the Din Malchus, and also it's great that everyone follows the Minhag.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that in 1 second. Let me, but yeah, really good point, Yair. So let's look at the other lines in this Tshuva here that I think are illustrative. So Moshe says, Hagia ba'atzmacha, right? So consider for yourself, da bara rupashut, shekol, and this is like such a radical, I mean, I guess it need not be so radical, but habara rupashut shekol elu hadinam atluyim b'minhag HaMedina, kigon ar sugya, b'metzia pegimel, makom shenagu shlo lahashkim v'shlo laharib, in arasha l'chofa, makom shenagu lazun yazun, sapik b'mesika, yisapik, same for kuf gimel, which we saw. He says, "Ein tzarach shiyasa minhag al pi chachmei Torah v'gam af lo al pi Yehudim, da'af shein higuza anachrim kigon shein rov toshvei ir nami hu midin haTorah bistama kefi haminag da'adaita de minhag ir nechshav kehisnu bistama." Notice he doesn't. So the first six times I read this, I glossed over this word nechshav. Like, so if you go on the reading that he were trying to just reconstruct the intent and minastam, they were thinking in terms of minhag. I think that's one way you could read this. But now that I look at this more closely, I think he's saying that, you know, it doesn't matter what the origin of the minhag is. The din Torah, right, like the Torah rule, is that absent provisions to the contrary, bistama, right? Kefi hamina, we follow the minhag. Why? De adaita de minhag ha'ir nechshav kehisnu mistama. Because it's as if, right, the halacha makes it as if you are masna adaita de minhag without providing otherwise. He doesn't say that as an empirical presumption, as an empirical fact, people default or people have in mind the local norms. Right, he's saying the din Torah is that we're machshivit ki'ilu your masna adaita de minhag. So I think this, looking closely at the language here, I think actually the language of Moshe moves away from that, this is the implied das argument, and leans into the idea of, like, the Torah rule is to assimilate the local minhag. And then Moshe goes a little further. He says, V'chein hu b'inyane mechira. I like this example a lot. Mahu b'chlal ha-mecher. So we have all these prakim in Baba Basra that talk about, you know, if you're mocher as a bayis, are you mocher as a marte, if you're mocher as a chatzer, if you sell a boat, did you also sell the sale? So Moshe says, Af she'ika dinam kvuim b'pirka mechira Baba Basra, mahu b'chlal mechira, etc. Hu rak b'makom she'ein minag. Aba b'makom she'yesh minag, hochen achara minag. He here, I think this formulation might lead a little bit into the first option. That, like, oh, minastam, it's as if your masna died to the minog. So this formulation doesn't take a clearer stand one way or the other. V'lachain ein chiluk mihem shehinhigu, it doesn't matter who enacted the minog. De'afim anachrim heim rov toshve ir hinhigu nidon bidin Torah bistama keminog. In a din Torah, we treat it as if it's the adaita de minog. Okay, anybody have... anyone have thoughts on this, Ramosha? I think it's a really nice piece. It really speaks to this kind of full yielding to minhag. Right? He says explicitly all these prakim and bavasra are not relevant when there's a minhag, and that's actually a strong extension of what we saw in the Ramach. The Ramach was in our sugya about the polem lahashkim lahariv. Ramosha explicitly makes the extension to all those cases of mochar sabayis la mochar sasvina. Mochar Sabayas and Mochar Sasvina, right? So whenever you want to know what's included in a sale, don't look to Choshen Mishpat. That's only going to be relevant when there's no established practice. You want to look to the Minog. Anyone have further thoughts on this? I just want to say this is like in the Beis Din, for example, this is like a really big tension between different people. Some people think that it's like a sellout of Halacha to... look to minog, and not to be applying more seifim of, you know, choshen mishpat and more prakim of bava basra. Maybe I thought that way years ago. My own view now is that that is what the halacha is providing for, right? So it's like a din in shulchan aruch. The din in shulchan aruch is hakol kaminag amedina. So to apply like the local rule is just as much an application of Choshen Mishpat as, say, right, looking into those prakim in Bava Basra. Some people don't have that view. They think that it's like the Torah is Chagura Sak if you apply the Minhag HaMedina. You'll see some of that in the Rashba, though it's not so clear what the Rashba is saying. But I think you know, Ramosha's language actually takes a stand on this, because Ramosha says, right, he keeps saying, Midin Torah... Midin haTorah b'stama kafiya minag, right? The din Torah is to apply the minag. So I think that supports my reading of minag mevatel halacha. It's not a suspension of applying the halacha, but this is just what the straightforward application of the halacha requires. Okay, thoughts on this, Ramosha?
This is on the question of ambivalence about applying this. Yeah, so Ramosha seems to be quite happy to apply minag mevatel. The way I read the Shoda Rashba about Yerusha was much more divided, as in, it seemed to, like the Rashba always says, he's quite cavalier about expanding Minhag HaMedina, that's fine. It's the bringing of Dina de Malchus Adina causes him to go on an entire polemic about deferring to about the Hashkafa of Isser Arkaos and all these sorts of other things. But he doesn't view that's relevant at all to Minhag HaMedina. Minhag HaMedina is just like, yeah, of course, merchants are going to do what they're going to do. But Dina from Alphus, that's destroying the Torah.
Yeah, and just very interesting that you say that. Cole had texted me when he saw that Rashba. He said maybe he didn't want to be quoted, but I'm going to quote him anyway. Omer Davar B'Shem Omer Mevigul Lola. Cole said this Rashba is unhinged. That was like the Rashba kind of just went loose on, you know, this minhag. But I mean, this Rashba is really important. One of the things that complicates the reading of the Rashba is that the Beis Yosef seem to have had a weird girsa of this Rashba, and then that makes its way into later poskim, who, in some people's view and in my view, they take the Rashba in the exact opposite way that the Rashba himself was going. So we'll talk about that in a second. Let's take Adam's hand, and then I want to look at the Rashba. Adam?
Yeah, it's unclear to me if it would necessarily paskin this way in, like, New Square.
Who, Ramosha?
Yeah.
Okay, flesh that out for me.
Meaning, the point being that he does seem concerned with sort of establishing, to some extent, what was mentioned on the outset. It's just that he tries to fill in the blank with, well, we don't know what's Nechshav from the outset. We're going to assume it was whatever was the Minhag Makom. The Minhag Makom is going to follow the Dina. but in a place where people don't really care at all about the Dina, and the Minhag is fairly established from the plurality, which is almost 100% Haredi Jewish or Hasidic Jewish, like, it's pretty obvious that's not what people had in mind.
That's what I'm not sure about. So in this last line here, which Yair was pointing us to, he says, "Vadai lo gara din amalchus me'aminag." Right. So Moshe says, for sure, like a legislation shouldn't be worse than the actual minag. Shebistama huke hisnu adaita de din hamalchus. Mikol shekain shekain noagin kedin amedina. Veninsa shegam haminagin. See, he says two separate things. He says the fact that it's the din hamalchus itself is no worse off than it being the minog. So, right, so if minog is, if the halacha defers to minog, kol shekein, or huadin, that it's going to defer to the law, and he says, oh, and it's nice that people actually abide by the law. It doesn't sound like he's hanging his hat on the fact that people abide by the law and that it becomes an actual minog. Sounds like he's totally fine that it's the law itself would be sufficient reason for the halacha to defer to it, not b'toras dina de machusadina, right? But because, like, it's like the normatively correct practice or something.
My point is, when it's not the normally correct practice.
I mean, it's not practiced as like a...
Yeah, it's not practiced.
So it sounds like Moshe doesn't require it to be the actual practice. Right, that's the sense you get from that. He says it's nice that it also is, but he says vaday lo gara din amalchus miminag miminag. You know, Chaim Soloveitchik always said that when someone says vaday, it means they have no proof. That's like his that's his rule for reading vadays, right? So maybe that's true here, but you know, Moshe thinks that you can make that extension.
I think go for it, Adam.
No, sure, go.
Mine is a tangential point, so...
Oh, okay, fine. I mean, it's the meaning of the phrase, I mean, it sounds like he's basing it on that. And even before when he used the lashon of...
Right, so I'm saying you could read this as just a legal, as like a halachic presumption, like, not a halachic empirical...
Even after he says, "Vadai lo gara din hamalchus b'mitam huketana na dada din hamalchus."
Yeah, but then he says... Then he says, "Kol shekein, kol shekein shekein dog." So
right.
It sounds like
it's two. It's clearly two separate rationales over here, right? Shua, you gonna make a point?
I think your read is excellent. I just think that makes me take a lot of step backs about what to think about this Rav Moshe, because if he's willing to claim that a normative law that isn't the minhag is still what the halacha is going to be toe-faced, then I see that as much closer to a gap-filling mechanism. For a couple of different reasons. Like, first of all, I think that it makes sense to me to say that, oh, this is just stumba of their das because it's the law, than to say that it wasn't stumba of their das, but we have some alternative reason to follow it if it's the law. If it's not what anyone else is following, that's like a little bit of a bigger stretch. It's also just a weird hierarchy, right? Because this kind of, like, we could have just as easily said this as the rule for the halacha, right? We could have said, even if the minhag is not like the halacha, we're going to assume stam das is like the halacha, because halacha is a legal superstructure in the same way that Rav Moshe is saying over here, halacha is the normative American law is superstructure that people are grabbing. So it could just be like, I mean, it makes me think that this is much more narrow in the mantle than you consider why it's the hierarchy. Maybe it's just what people know best. Maybe it's just most easily enforced. There are like a couple of different sexy options, obviously, but
you're saying like your public policy. Like, what is the underlying public policy behind it?
Right, and I think that I was, like, excited before about some idea of, like, a dynamic halacha that recognizes that, like, communal norms are generated by some, like, understanding of, like, what's best out of time, and that's, like, the best way to legislate dynamism is to, like, attach it to something shifting, And here it sounds much more like just maybe ease of enforcement or opportunity to like find out what it is most easily or something like that.
Right, so you're like, you know, it's like the, it's interesting. It's like the, you're somewhere between like this super progressive and super conservative view, right? So it's like, you know, progressives are skeptical. Progressives like Daniel Drosowitz, you know, are skeptical of like the top-down superstructure. But then like conservatives like Hayek, you know, they think that like it's the common law refinement and evolution over time, not top-down legislation, right? Like you're skeptical of like activist legislation to frustrate people's like market expectations. So there are different reasons why you could be skeptical of like the, why you think the top-down legislation part of Ramosha kind of undercuts the, what you're calling the flexibility or, right, like.
I hear what you're saying. I just wouldn't put it into Ramosha's mouth, especially after like his final line where he's like, but you can't ask judges because they're all corrupt. You have to like ask someone who's an expert in the law. So it doesn't seem like he's hanging his hat on like a intelligent sovereign. I think it's more just like we can get the answer to this question.
I don't think Ramosha is taking a stand so much on right the underlying reason why the halakha here punts to Minhag HaMedina in general, but he may be taking a stand on whether formally it's about shoehorning in das, right, filling in blanks, or whether he's recognizing that halakha just yields to or incorporates marketplace norms entirely when it comes to Dine Mominus. Okay, really good. This is, you want to follow up, Shua? Looks like you have something to say. Okay. So I wanna round out this idea that I think emerges from Ramosha's analysis from two tshuvos. So one is going to be the tshuvos of Rashba. But I want to come to that second. The first one is this famous Marshach. I think the Marshach lived in the 16th century in Greece. He has this really difficult but powerful tshuva that sheds a lot of light on this idea of Minhag. Just to give you a little background for what he's going to cite, let's take a quick look at Tzitumta. I don't want to get deep into Tzitumta now because it's a big sugya. But he's going to appeal to some formulations of Tzitumta. Let's read the Marshach, and then we'll look at where he borrows some of his formulations from. So, to make a long story short, we don't really have the Shaila here. Was anybody able to reconstruct the Shaila from the case, just from reading it? So it sounds like there was a dispute between two merchants in the place where they had done business in Venice. It seems like it was quite obvious or understood that you didn't adjudicate your disputes according to what he calls Din Torah. You adjudicated according to Minhag HaSochrim. He says, for example, here, let's see. One party wants the other party lamod bedin hasochrim sheyadunu beinayim kiminag venetzia yan kia esek sheasa ruven aviyam imshimon aniskar hayasham. So it's like this guy, there's a dispute between Yarshim, but the parents did business in Venice. It's undisputed that in Venice the minag was to adjudicate what's called minag hasochrim. But now the problem is that the Yorshim are having this dispute. I guess they live in a firmer neighborhood. And in the firmer neighborhood, people would adjudicate according to Din Torah. And so there's this gap between where the dispute broke out, where the business was done, and where the Yorshim who want to litigate the dispute, like what the custom is near them. So you could see Marshach opens by saying, look, as a general rule, we know from the end of Ksuvis that if you entered into an agreement about paying back a debt, so the kinds of coins that you have to pay with are fixed by the place where the loan was issued, right? Kol ha-mischayev l'chaveiro sachmos al-smach ha-mokom shenasa ha-chiyev gamar m'shabit nafshe. So he says, oh, that would imply that as a rule, you would follow the place where the ASEC was done, which would imply that you should follow the Minagov of Venice. Then he doesn't like that for kind of the reasons we outlined earlier that, you know, it seems wrong to circumvent the Torah's rules, right? He says, Imkol Zeh, you might distinguish and say, our case is different because I guess there was no explicit agreement about what rules would be used to govern their agreement or resolve their disputes. One party wants to make the other party adjudicate according to Dinah Sochrim, because that's where the business was entered into. But he says, Man leimalon sheyuchlu lechaivo alkach v'shelo yuchal shimon liton ki im yesh lehem eza hefresh v'tviya sheyadunu alpi Torah, alpi ha-Torah, kefi ha-makom ha-tviya. It's not obvious that, you know, you could resist adjudicating according to din Torah, as is the custom in the makom ha-tviya where they want to litigate the claim now. Okay? And then he says, even though it seems right that you would adjudicate according to Din Torah, like the Makom HaTfiya, im kol zeh kad ma'ainan shapir yira dekushta demilsa hi sheyecholim yarshei ruvein lachof l'shimon ladon b'din asochrim al pi minag v'netzia kivan shenaseh sham ha'esek. So first he starts off and says, you know what, the method of resolving the dispute, and I guess the rules, will be defined by Minag of HaSochrim, because that's where the business was done. And to motivate that, he says, Hadavar yadua dibinyane haknios v'haschoros v'chol anyane mas v'matan shenogu HaSochrim v'iskeyem v'yesh lanu l'leches achre min hagehem v'afilu bistam minag. So it's really interesting, right? Even if it's like just like a default minag that people do, it's not, I guess, explicit anywhere. It's not like positive law. It's just a practice. So we follow that practice. Im kein me'achar sheruve nasa v'nasan im shimon b'makom shenagu shelo yitzdarchu b'iskeim ladun b'din Torah shehaya min ha'nimnaos lisa v'litein v'yivatel ha'esek v'amaso matan. Here, what he's saying is that had we interpreted their business deal as abiding by Din Torah, the business deal would be incoherent. Hayitachin shenomar sheyisa v'yiten al smach oso aminag. V'adavar yadua sheim oso ha'esek v'amoro sheifshar sheyeru ba'oso ha'esek hayu nidonim b'din Torah, hiniach ma'oso v'alkeren ha'tzvi v'yochel halav v'chadi. Were we to interpret the original agreement as having been bound by Din Torah, it would have been a totally irrational business deal. One party would have been just like forfeiting his money and giving it to the other person gratuitously to consume. So he says, "V'lisafek lo haya Reuven osa esek imahem." Like, there's no way Reuven would have entered into that deal had it been bound by the rules of Din Torah. It's inconceivable to think that he intended to be bound by the Din Torah Minhag. Right? So clearly he was intended to be bound by Minhag HaSochrim. Right? Right? It doesn't seem right to say that, like, if a Tviya arises somewhere else for Kedin Torah, he should be bound by that. Lo shavkes chaya l'chol birya. Right, you'd be undermining people's business deals if they entered into it under assumptions of Minhag HaSochrim, and then you bound them to adjudicate according to Din Torah. So what do you make of this tshuva of the Marshach? I mean, again, it's a very strong statement about deferring to Minhag HaSochrim. The question is here: does it shed light on the normative basis for appealing to Minhag that we're interested in? Zacharia?
Yeah, so on the latter question, just how does he think Hakol Minhag is working? I found his kind of logic, which is based off kind of, well, let's go and reconstruct what might they have been thinking, kind of a strong indication that the Minhag Medina is just about reconstructing what they were thinking at the time of the agreement.
Yeah.
Again, it's not Mofrachik, and even in the remote, you can read it the other way.
Yeah, that's good. I think my sense also from this Marshak is that he's trying to figure out, he's arguing that the business deal wouldn't have been coherent or rational under Din Torah rules, therefore it's clear that they were assuming Minhag HaSochrim. Right? So it does sound like he's trying to figure out what rules were they thinking, or, you know, had you asked them, to take Mitnick's point, right, what rules would they have incorporated had they thought about it? I think you're right that his analysis does go along those lines. Yeah.
I mean, something kind of like more tangential but more shocking was that he kind of notes offhand what he thinks the genesis of the Minhag was. He notes in the beginning of the second last paragraph. I read it as a little more general. It says, Me'ach HaShiruvi Boko Shalogu Shalom Yitzchu Is Kehem Ladun B'din Torah Matan. I've read that as a much more general thing, that the Sochrim just stopped following Din Torah there because that was an obstacle to business, and just more general, and therefore that's why they started this minhag of not following the Din Torah. And it's shocking that he still validates that. He doesn't criticize that whatsoever. He just says, so yeah, perfect, yeah, no, reasonable.
I'm not sure I agree with your reading here. Let's parse through this carefully. I think what he's saying here is, since Reuven and Shimon did business in a place where it was not expected that they would be bound by Din Torah, right? Shehaya min hanimnaos lisa velitain v'yivatel ha'esek v'amaso matan. Because it's inconceivable that they would agree to do business a certain way only to have it frustrated by a later adjudication according to Din Torah, right? So imagine you have a contract that, you know, talks about all these, like, future assets and Davar Shlobo Yolams and Davar Shena Bershusos, right? And you have a question like, oh, is a dispute about this contract going to be adjudicated according to Din Torah, right? And the Marshak saying, well, it would be totally irrational to have done all this business deal only to leave yourself vulnerable to a Dayan who could invalidate it all by saying, oh, this is the Davar Shena Bershuso, it's Davar Shlobo Yolam, right? We could invalidate the agreements. So I don't think he's stating a general claim. I think he's making a comment.
He's only saying that at the end of the paragraph. I read the first line as qualifying the Makum Shenahagu.
Right, I guess you're saying, like, the reason why Venetian merchants did it Kedin Torah, sorry, Kaminagas,
all these obstacles, and look, here's our example, a prime example. They want to do the standard business deal, and it would have, if you followed Din Torah, at least to ridiculous consequences.
Yeah, it could be that he's saying that that's why the minhag in Venice was to Lizdaya and Kaminagas Sofram, right? Is that, that's your reading?
Yeah, on that first line.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Yeah, and you're saying he's okay with that, right? That's just part of the halacha, you might say. That's part of this phrase over here. Is Davyadua binyani akniyos vaschoros chonuni masematon yeshan oleches achre minhageim. Like, the Torah is not really makbid when it comes to these dine mominous things. The Torah gives you default rules, as Cole said. It's like a sleeping sovereign if there's no minhag to the contrary. But, you know, once these other rules kick in, the Torah is totally okay with your embracing them. And that definitely is the vibe you get from his tshuva. Yeah, good. Other thoughts on the Marshak, Mitnick?
Now I'm just wondering how much this is for real and how much it is not letting one party get screwed over by the other party acting with that. I mean, because the Gemara said, right, that the cases of Nehemiah is going to be paid less, right? So, right, paid less, and so one might think that there's some kind of implicit deal not to leave your money, care on state, commercial, and the default. So this is definitely in conflict with that. And I'm wondering how much of this is just like an unjust enrichment thing that's flowed in more and more states.
Aha. Uh-huh. Interesting. I would say I definitely hear, like, the sentiment to say this is like an ex post facto way of making sure that no party is grossly messed over by, right, like, they entered into this agreement with certain expectations, and it would be like totally unfair to pull out a chop in Shulchan Aruch to mess over one party, right?
Right, because if you go with the words, right, so then they do contradict the Gemara. The Gemara says that we don't establish the case and change the amount that we definitively decided what you instead do follow the minimum.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think my response to that is the conceptual legwork here is it's just overkill if he's trying to get to that ex post facto result, right? Like he goes full throttle on Situmta, Davar Yadua, Binyani Aknios, etc., etc. I think you wouldn't need all that if you were just trying to make the narrow point about, you know, Pshara, this is what you guys thought initially, this is what seems fair. But, you know, maybe it is overkill, even if you're just trying to get that result. You see what I'm saying, Yoni?
Yeah, I mean, it's ironic that the opinion that says you do is a minority going to be showing all the, you know, the, I don't know. Of course, if you're coming out in force, you're not going to be, like, not going to have whatever. You're going to come out, you know, full throttle if you want to do the problem.
Yeah, I think he does come out full throttle. The one place where he pulls back is on his analysis about how the business deal would be irrational, right? With if it would be irrational under Din Torah. Is he suggesting that this is like the standard by which to assess whether people are working Kedin Torah versus Minhag HaMedina?
Well, this is not the first time that, right? So that Ramban talks about how when people do work on something more ritual that they're doing it al-das, whatever the Muhammad define and why she came in for this time. So there is some submission to authority when you do an act that has more significance than you can necessarily do, right? And so depending on what area you're working in ritual law, you're going to have a common one. So you're saying when you're doing it in civil law, you're going to whatever the name is to follow. That part kind of makes sense.
But he's going more than that, right? He's not just saying that your das is to follow whatever the minhag is. It's like, well, if this transaction is incoherent, if right, but for you're following the minhag, then we'll assume you're following the minhag, right? That's kind of just a much more radical, it's a much higher standard for determining when somebody's following minhag than just like, hey, if you do business b'makom shenagu, that's what we're going to assume you are doing.
Right,
but going back to the first part, what the result
of that is that there's no gotcha moments where one party can engage in. And I think that's something that so.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Geyer? Yeah, just a question, I guess, for Yoni. What do you mean by saying this is sort of like an ex post facto kind of analysis? My understanding of all of the cases that we've been dealing with to date is that this question only becomes relevant as ex post facto. If you're asking lechachila, then you say, which system do you want to follow? Every case of minhag is going to be retrospective.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. I don't know if that, I would characterize it as post as much as I can, that trying to prevent parties from doing behavior like this next time you try to take advantage and maybe they won't come to that kind of thing. So, on the one hand, I say, ex post just means like what the result is rather than not looking for intention, just looking at the result.
It's like crisis management rather than like articulating like a broad halachic theory, right, Yoni? Yeah. Okay, good. Let's get our feet wet in this Rashba for 8 minutes, and we'll pick up with it on Tuesday. So, you know, this Rashba is the third in the trinity of Minhag HaSocharim Tshuvos, right? It's this Ramosha, this Marshach, and then you get this Rashba, and there's a smaller Rashba that's actually not known. I think we discovered it last year in our Bav Metzia analysis. Let me just mention that second Rashba, the less known one. This is the Rashba in Chelek Vav Reish Chav Dalid, about the contractual dispute. So this is like a great little case. So, Reuven Sholcho Hamelech B'Shlichus Mimachos Marseya. Hey, it's probably Marseille. Right, in like southern France. Right, I think so. So this Provençal king sent Reuven on a shlichus, lemelech, not sure where that is, Leos Turgamon leprashim. So he was going to be a translator for some other king. So this Reuven, who was, I guess, sent as some sort of translating ambassadorship, v'sachar Yehudi l'shamsho b'schar yedua b'chol aderech, v'nasan lo k'tzas me'aschiros t'chila, v'sacharo b'kinyin, b'edim, etc. So you have Reuven who hires Shimon to be his agent to follow along with him, help him out for the road, and they travel all the way to this place, and v'nepach ruach acher v'chziram la'achor ad malchus Marseille, right? So this king who was like supposed to receive the ambassador and the translator, I guess he changed his mind and he sent them back home to Marseille. Sounds like Reuven died when he got back home. V'hasachir, and the agent who was accompanying him, nis'asekbo, v'shimsho kehogen b'chayiv moso. This mishamish took good care of him. And Reuven has an estate. And now the agent is suing the estate that he should be paid for his serving Reuven along this trip. So, like, you can imagine, I think the dispute here is he was hired to be Mishamesh Reuven. Reuven died without the trip actually being completed because they were sent back from this other kingdom. And the legal question is whether Reuven's still entitled to his compensation that he was promised. We could ask, I don't know, Shua and Yoni, if you have thoughts on what the law would say about this. Shua went to Yale, so he doesn't know anything about the law. He doesn't know any substantive doctrines about the law. Shua? Minik? No?
Okay. I lost my unmute button, I'm sorry. They'll pay it from the estate. Seems like the equitably appropriate choice, which in my bar study I found would give me the right answer like 70% of the time.
There you go. See, why can't the Marshach just say that instead of all of his Kinyansi Tumta stuff, right? So you see the Rashba here is the interesting thing is he says V'im tirtze lomar shekonos chiruso v'fisha yachal lomar yavo asochar v'yashlem t'no. So the agent's view is that he's not the reason why the trip was terminated, right? He was happy to continue serving the guy, just the guy died on him, right? V'od she'sha'alnu hasochrim goyim v'yehudim she'kol she'parshu gam hasochir konos charo she'zeh minag shel mefarshe yamim. So it sounds like Shua said, right? Like the custom here is that once the boat takes off, you're kona the schar, regardless of what happens afterwards, right? If the boat gets turned back at the port, like you're still entitled to your schar once it leaves dock. So the Rashba's answer to this tshuva, to this shayla, is teda, afal pi shemeis habal habayis, ad shelo hishlimu kol hamahalich, kana hasachir kol schiruso, chada de afilu lo yiyeh hadin nosein kein. Even if the halacha on its own merits didn't hold that way, kivan shem minag mefarshe yamim kein sham hakol holech achar minag. So you get this really strong view in the Tshuvas Rashba, like, look, regardless of whatever the halacha says, if it's the minag, that's going to be dispositive. That's going to determine that he's entitled to his compensation. Gary, you have a hand?
That might be a residual hand.
Okay. Okay, so this Rashba, I think, is just like a nice, clear statement. He doesn't even get into Das or Minastam, what were they thinking? He just says, like, whatever the... it's a learned hand. He says, whatever the Minag is, that's going to be totally decisive. Good. This Rashba, I think, is pretty straightforward. The question for us to consider is, and maybe we'll pick up with this next time, is how to make sense of the Rashba and Chelek Vav, Reishon and Dalet. Just to mention what the Shaila here is about, here you have a difficult case of Yerusha, where the Minug in Perpignan, also southern France, totally contradicts the halacha. It's a case of a wife who predeceased her husband. The Minug in Perpignan was that the father inherits the deceased daughter's estate over her husband. But the halacha is clear that a baal is yoresh es ishto. So you have just like a direct conflict between the halacha and the minhag in Perpignan. Zachariah, you want to weigh in quickly? I saw you unmuted yourself, or no? Okay. So the question is, which one of these prevails? On the face of it, why should the minhag have any force? So the argument is that since everybody in Perpignan does this, someone who gets married there implicitly is accepting the local custom. So we'll have to take a look at the language of the Shaila. This Shaila becomes very relevant, things like... also keep in mind, this is a Yerusha case, right? So Yerusha is a little different from Dine Mamanis. So we have to keep that in mind. This tshuva, I just want to mention, becomes very relevant for, practical questions of when a couple gets divorced, let's say, in New York, a Jewish couple, should the assets be distributed according to the halachos of Nichsei Milug and Nedunya and Nichsei Tzon Barzel and, Baal B'Nichsei Ishto, which is how the halacha seems to envision the division of assets upon divorce. Or do you say hey, it's New York, equitable distribution, and when they got married, Minastam, they were thinking New York law. And so the Rashba here has a very difficult view. So he says one thing, and then he shifts gears. So let's pick up with this Rashba on Tuesday. Then I'll talk briefly about Situmta and one thing in Kinyan. And then I think we could get started in our analysis of Zechus Achilas Poel Mishal Baal HaBayis. So that's the plan for Tuesday. Sound good? All right, great. Yeah, sure, go. We're going to have a bigger group on Tuesday. But I think we'll figure out, let's hold off on Sundays for now, and let's assume that we're going to be on a Tuesday-Thursday schedule. Does that work for everybody here? More or less? Great.
Yeah.
Super. Great. Shkoyach, everyone. Feel free to email out comments if you have to the emailing list or to the WhatsApp group. Such that the weekend's a nice time to just mull over what we covered. Great. Shkoyach, everyone. Take care.